Okay, members, we will have the Committee on Health and Human Services Reform come to order. There is a quorum present. And members, before we get to the business of the day, I just wanted to bring everybody up to speed. We've had some committee staff changes since last session, so I just want to make sure everybody recognizes and knows the names of the people in the committee. And so first, we have a new committee legislative assistant, and it's Emily Hansen. And we have a new GOP House researcher, Bethany Doro-Biabla. And then we also have a new HHS reform committee administrator, Carmen Johnson. However, she will not be on full-time duty at this time, and so Holly Iverson will be helping out. So just to the public, lobbyists, and people in the committee, just a good idea with that situation as it is, if you just want to CC in Holly as well as Bethany Doro-Biabla, just to make sure that any requests or issues or questions don't get missed when it comes to how things are proceeding in the committee. So, and if there's any questions about that, please feel free to let me know. Also, I want everyone just to introduce, we have our committee pages, and that is Lauren Allen and Jim Wilkin right over here. If you just want to wave, thank you so much for your help on the committee. And I think that covers it just in terms of housekeeping business. And so, members, we have three bills on the agenda today, and with no further ado, we will get started. Our first bill up is House File 2572, Representative Zerwas. And so I will go to you, Representative Zerwas, to present your bill.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. Members, I'll move House File 2572, and this will be referred to...
Representative Zerwas, it will be referred to the Committee on Government Operations.
GovOps, that's my motion, Madam Chair. Members, House File 2572 is the child, looks at legislation surrounding the child advocacy centers. Annually, about $400,000 is appropriated by the legislature to the child advocacy centers. Child advocacy centers are multidisciplinary teams that use a case review process each month to share information about open cases to make sure that children, that cases involving children and families and potential abuse don't fall through the cracks. It's a multidisciplinary team that has law enforcement, child protection, someone from a prosecutor's office, medical and mental health professionals, victim advocacy, and then child advocacy staff. One of the concerns that an advocate brought to me was concerns around being able to effectively work in this multidisciplinary team approach. The existing statute talks about working at as a community-based agency may include, but not as limited to, schools, social service agencies, family service, mental health collaboratives, and there was a specific county in Greater Minnesota that, as we expanded and funded this program, weren't 100% comfortable that child advocacy centers weren't specifically called out in the current legislation that allows for this collaboration to work, and so that's why we're here today. I can briefly turn it over to Marsha Milliken, the Executive Director of Minnesota's Children Advocacy Center.
Welcome to the committee. If you could just introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Marsha Milliken, and I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Children's Alliance. We're a state coalition of children's advocacy centers and multidisciplinary teams. Right now, we have 7 established children's advocacy centers and 4 developing children's advocacy centers that are a direct result of the legislative appropriation. And as we develop children's advocacy centers, we want to make sure that the this statute is interpreted the same throughout the state. Some counties interpret it that, yes, this does include child advocacy centers, but we have had the situation where they it's been interpreted that it may or may not. So we just want to make sure that it's interpreted throughout the state so that the case review process isn't left up in the air. And case review is a very important part of our process. We review open cases to make sure that everybody can communicate about what's happening and what's best for the child, the family, and the investigation, and it allows them to share that information.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Milliken. Representative Zerbas, I'm sorry, do you have anything else, or should we go to questions or any other testifiers?
That's all I have, Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you. We have a question. Representative Mullery.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Milliken, I guess?
Mm-hmm.
First of all, either of you answer, is there a definition someplace of children's advocacy centers? Because pretty broad, and it's not capitalized, so it looks like it could be mean about anything.
I might defer to House research, but I believe it's defined in statute from last session, from when we expanded the funding and expanded the range out of the metro area. I know.
Ms. Aves, is it place in statute or someplace?
Ms. Aves.
Madam Chair, Representative Mullery, I am not certain whether it is or not. I can look it up. I don't think it is a defined term, but I'm not 100% certain. I can check and let you know that.
And Representative Mullery.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Ms. Milliken, you said they were denied being... I guess I'm wondering how they could not be considered another agency serving children and families. You're saying that the county attorney determined in some counties that they were not that?
Ms. Milliken.
I'm sorry. Madam Chair, Representative Mullery. The county attorney determined that they were not covered under this statute as a child advocacy center. They decided that they were not covered under the other listings. And so we just want to make sure that all counties have no question that they are covered by this statute.
And Madam Chair,
Representative Mullery.
Madam Chair. But it would still be your understanding that the county may include them, so that if there, I can see without a definition, children's advocacy centers, maybe something that didn't work well with the county could call themselves that, and the county wouldn't want them. It's your understanding the county can still decide whether or not to include them, isn't it?
Ms. Milliken.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Mullery. Yes, I do understand that it says may, and then it's up to the Child Advocacy Center to build that relationship, but at least it's provided for in statute.
Representative Dean.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Zerwas, does this bill cost any money?
Representative Zerwas.
Madam Chair, Chair Dean, this will not cost you any money.
Are you sure?
I'm very sure.
All right.
Other questions, members? And is there anyone from the audience who wishes to testify for or against the bill? Okay, seeing none and seeing no further questions, Representative Zerwas renews his motion that House File 2572 be re-referred to the Committee on Government Operations and Elections Policy. All those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed, no. The motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Zerwas. And Representative Zerwas, you have House File 2564. Next bill on the agenda, and Representative Zerwas moves that House File 2564 be re-referred to the Committee on Health and Human Services Finance. Representative Zerwas, two-year bill.
Madam Chair, House File 2564 deals with rural ambulance services and exempting rural ambulance services from the provider tax. Currently, rural ambulance services from around the state are being audited by the Department of Revenue. These volunteer fire services do not have the resources to pay the back taxes. They were under the understanding in a previous understanding agreement that a volunteer rural ambulance service would not be subject to the 2% provider tax. The Department of Revenue reinterpreted that acquisition and began going out across greater Minnesota and auditing rural ambulance services, having some rural ambulance services with between a 40 or 100,000 or even greater bill when you look back over several years. This got a lot of rural ambulance services off guard, where some in the initial round of audits when they were going back as many as 5 years, some ambulance services were in the position of wondering if they were going to have to sell off their rig in order to pay the back taxes to the Department of Revenue. Revenue has been great and been willing to work with providers to reduce their tax penalty, and this bill will do a lot to solve that problem moving forward. We are still currently working with DHS around the exact wording and the cost, and we'll deal with this issue as the bill advances in Health and Human Service Finances. With me today is Buck McAlpin from the Minnesota Ambulance Association, and he can also help answer some questions.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. McAlpin.
Madam Chair, members, Buck McAlpin, Minnesota Ambulance Association. I think Representative Zerwas kind of hit it on the head. This wasn't an issue really on the radar of the Ambulance Association, but towards the end of session last year, we started to be contacted from legislators, being contacted by their local ambulance service. Service is doing 70, 80, 100 runs a year, very rural. And what happened is, in defense of revenue, and what had happened is, we define a volunteer as being paid less than $6,000 a year or less in ambulance time to be on the ambulance. What happens is we put part-time paramedic into law about 6-7 years ago. And so if I work for North Memorial in Robbinsdale as a full-time paramedic and I go to my small community, we would enjoy that we could offer advanced life support in a small community. Well, the minute I stepped on there as a paid professional, I know that now became a full-time ambulance service in the revenue's eyes, and it fell under the MnCare tax. So these were taxes that have not usually been collected, and it caught some of them off guard. Representative Zerwas is right, quite expensive. And revenue did work with us at the end of last session, reduced some of them dramatically. But the other piece we also figured out is in Minnesota we're certified responders, and that was another piece of law. So if Representative Mullery and I go out on the volunteer fire department on a call and we get paid $8 each, by law today we owe 2% on our $8. And with the problems we have in rural Minnesota, we don't think that was the intent of the tax. Representative Zerwas is right. We have been working with DHS on some federal waiver issues about how we address it. We kept the number of 5,000 and below to catch outstate Minnesota services. The large health care systems don't think they should be exempted from this. We do benefit from the tax, and we really want to try to focus it on rural Minnesota.
Okay, thank you. Questions from members. Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Mr. McAlpin. I'm just trying to understand who it catches and who it doesn't, because the description was about the small rural volunteer services with 70 to 80 runs a year, and I don't think anyone has any problem with that. But then there's sort of this arbitrary 5,000, which is 100 runs a week, which I don't know if you can do much more than 20 a day. I mean, thinking how long a run takes and to stabilize someone for the rest of transport or whatever. And so can you give us a little clearer description of who would be, I mean, 5,000 runs a year is pretty large. So is there like two or three metro tax-supported entities that might be still caught but not someone else? I'm just thinking, I represent Hennepin County, and Hennepin County Medical Center runs ambulance runs. They collect a lot of property taxes because they're not able to, they're serving our uninsured. And so the question is, why don't we just take it off of everybody who provides this service instead of just, you know, creating a number that excludes probably just a pretty few but might have an impact on property taxes?
Mr. McAlpin.
Madam Chair, Representative Loeffler, a great question. That may be what we end up with in Finance Committee to make it work for the CMS, is that it's a statewide exemption. And I would say we have to remember six or seven large companies transport about 75-80% of a 500,000 ambulance transports. And those same large companies have all the have kind of taken over as the infrastructures kind of fell apart in rural Minnesota. The Alinas, North Memorials, Gold Crosses, Health East, and just some of the larger operations. And they're also ones that are locally tax-supported to operate because their bigger metro systems can't do that. And Hennepin's a prime example, about 55,000 transports, very large EMS operation. And the other thing in Allstate, Minnesota, is our Medicaid, Medicare payer mix has gotten towards 80, 85% in some of these operations that pay well below the cost to operate them. So one of our options may be, as we work with DHS, is that it is a statewide exception.
Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm glad that that's on the table because I do think, you know, we ought to treat the whole industry fair, and every ambulance provider provides service to uninsured people for whom, you know, they have to swallow this. And if we're going to exempt a profession, I think our tradition has been you just do it for everyone. Otherwise, we'll have another bill back here again next year, right?
Well, and Madam Chair.
Representative Zerwas.
Madam Chair, Representative Loeffler. And just the people that were coming to different members of the legislature last spring were ambulance service that traditionally had not paid in to the 2% provider tax and who revenue was back several years. And so it was not the Gold Crosses, it was not the Healthies or the HCMC operations. But it was the Elk River Ambulance Service that got stuck with a bill and thought, well, do we have to sell one of our rigs in order to pay this tax bill? I mean, what the heck are we going to do? And so that's the issue that we were presented with about 9 months ago. And we've been working with the department, with DHS and Revenue, both very closely to see how we can resolve this without impacting service anywhere in the state, but certainly in greater Minnesota.
Thank you.
Okay. Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Zerwas, how much money would come out of the fund if we did implement this bill?
Well,
Representative Zerwas.
Madam Chair, Representative, it depends. And that's one of our challenges with getting a fiscal note. Since traditionally, for small rural ambulance services, this has not been collected in the past. All they have is a handful of audits. It would be a really difficult task to put together what the fiscal note would look like. Now, obviously, if we do a statewide exemption because of a CMS waiver, if we're pushed in that direction, that changes the bill quite drastically. But for this version, for this bill today, in order to get a fiscal note, that's been one of our challenges, is traditionally it has not been collected. This is a recent development over the last year, and so getting a full picture has been quite challenging.
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So in your example of your constituents that contacted you, what was their tax bill?
Madam Chair, Representative, I believe Elk Rivers was $135,000. Pipestone Ambulances was 50-ish thousand. They negotiated down. International Falls was $46,000. Trying to remember some of the other ones. So that was their negotiated rate. Some of them were almost twice that. Revenue has the right to go back 7 years, and they agreed to only go back three when Representative Zerwas and I worked with them last year with Representative Davids to look at how we address that.
Thank you.
Representative Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And maybe to add a little perspective on the number of runs, my wife in some years had 1,000 with the first responders. She didn't spend as much time volunteering with the Dodge County or the Chatfield Ambulance Services. My sons also did that. So, you know, you can get quite a few runs with these volunteer organizations. But the big thing you got to keep in mind is they struggle. They hold bake sales. They hold community fundraisers. These are not opulent outfits. And, you know, frankly, when my family members were participating, there was no real pay. That a little bit went into an account for retirement. And I'm not sure which ones are affected like that. So there's a big difference between an enterprise where people are actually being paid an hourly rate and small ambulance services that, you know, a magnitude is different than a minimum wage. But this is something that means having that service in greater Minnesota and not. And I know for a fact many lives were saved by having this. And I think anything we can do to ensure the continued service to our the people across, we need to do it. Is any bill perfect? I haven't seen one yet. And frankly, I would hate to slow down the right thing just because it may not be, you know, perfect for other entities.
And just briefly to Representative Schultz's question, just so the committee knows, Representative Dean's office has requested a revenue estimate on this bill, and so that will be forthcoming. Representative Zerwas.
And Madam Chair, we fully intend to, once we get that fiscal note back, and continue our work through our partnership with DHS, and figuring out what we need to do to navigate the CMS issues. This by no means is our final version.
Representative Mulry.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Zerwas. I guess it'll appear in the next committee then. But I was wondering what revenue thought of this. And second of all, if you're really just trying to correct the problem that people weren't collecting it and now are responsible, you could just have it be forgiving up to this time, and then they would know enough to do it after that.
Representative Zerwas.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative Mulry, I know this summer in my conversations with revenue, that was my approach, was some type of tax forgiveness. And I know revenue was very uncomfortable with that approach. Their opinion was, and in my meetings with revenue, was this was a tax that was on the bills. We're collecting it, and you pay us to collect taxes.
Representative Mulry.
Madam Chair, and Representative Zerwas, from being on the Tax Committee for 10 years, the revenue often disagreed with the legislature.
Fair enough.
Members, any further questions? And I guess really quick, is there anyone from the audience who wants to testify for or against the bill? And seeing no questions from members, Representative Zerwas will renew his motion that House File 2564 be re-referred to the Committee on Health and Human Services Finance. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion prevails.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, committee members.
Thank you, Representative Zerwas. Members, our next bill and final bill of the day is House File 2609, Representative Keel's bill. And members, I will move that House File 2609 be re-referred to the Committee on Health and Human Services Finance. We have the bill before us. I'm not aware of any amendments. And welcome to our committee, Representative Keel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was mining a few minutes ago. Was in mining committee. Anyway, I appreciate having this bill heard, House File 2609, and I wasn't paying attention to you. Did you move this?
I did Thank move you. It, and so it's in front of us, Representative Keel. So if you want to present your bill, and then we'll go to testifiers.
Thank you very much. I apologize. House File 2609 provides funding necessary for Minnesota to participate in an 8-state demonstration project which will establish a certified community behavioral health clinics. Acronym is already out there, CCBHC, quite a mouthful. These are designed to be a one-stop shop community clinics that will provide comprehensive and coordinated and integrated care to children and adults with complex mental and chemical health conditions. I think Minnesota has been awarded 982 $5,000 to start this clinic or to start this project. And with me, I have a couple of testifiers I'd like them to explain in detail.
Welcome to the committee. If you could introduce yourself for the record and then proceed with your testimony.
Absolutely. Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm grateful to be here today. My name is Pahua Yang, and I'm the Director of Community Mental Health Services at the Wilder Foundation. But at heart, I'm a therapist. I've been a therapist for most of my adult career, and I'm also a caretaker of family and friends who have struggled with mental illness and chemical dependency disorders. So I come to you today as a professional, but also about a topic that I am passionate about to the very core of who I am as a person. Last year, I sat in front of many of you to tell you about our psychiatry shortage and to tell you about how sad I was that people were grateful that my colleagues and I were returning phone calls to tell people that we would put their child on our wait list. In addition, every day we see people with significant mental health and chemical health needs who fall through the cracks because we have not built the kind of system of care that is responsive to them. For example, someone who has a mental illness may have a therapist, a psychiatrist. If they have a chemical dependency disorder, they may have a treatment provider for that. They may have a primary care provider. They might have a provider who is helping them with housing. They might have a provider who is helping with employment services. And they may also have a case manager on top of that. There are potentially seven or more people involved with this person, this one person. Potentially seven or more agencies involved with this one person. And potentially seven different intakes and sets of paperwork and documentation that this person will have to be involved with, and potentially seven different people that he or she would have to call. And this is our current system, and this is the current fragmentation that can happen in our system. But we have the incredible opportunity in our state to do something about the psychiatry issue, as well as the issue I just described, as well as many other critical things that impact the health and well-being of many Minnesotans. In fact, we have the opportunity to do this incredible thing that will be good for all communities and that will benefit all Minnesotans, both urban and rural. This incredible opportunity is called the Certified Community Behavioral Health Clinic, or the CCBHC. CCBHCs are created to transform the delivery of community mental health services by creating greater access to coordinated care that integrates chemical, physical, and behavioral health while creating a stable and sustainable funding stream, all extremely critical to better meet people's mental health and chemical health needs. The CCBHC can expand access and services to people who need it and want it in a way that is most effective for them, streamline the point of contact for people, reduce the current fragmentation that I described in our system, and allow providers like myself to just do what people need so that they can achieve and maintain recovery. CCBHCs are not the end all. Rather, what I ask all of us to think about is the end, which is really healthy, happy adults and children and families in recovery. But the CCBHC can be a tool to how we get there. We literally have lives that depend on us making our system more whole through opportunities like the CCBHC. And this is the part that matters to my staff, to my colleagues in the community, to the people that we serve, and to the people who are all a part of our families and our communities across Minnesota. So thank you for hearing my testimony today.
Thank you for being here today. Members, are there any questions for the testifiers or for the author? Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I mean, the goals are laudable, and you know, this is a great opportunity, it seems like, in some ways. I just have some questions about how this fits in with our current service system, in terms of managed care, and because we have a lot, we have, like, for example, in Hennepin Health, and we have accountable care organizations and other parts that are part of these innovated coordinated care processes, and I'm just wondering if you've had a chance to work with that at all, because I just didn't see any language. You have language about coordinating with the counties and other providers and whatever, and I just didn't know how that would really work.
Representative Giel.
Part of my issue is that some of my testifiers are actually at a mental health workshop in Las Vegas. So that is part of the problem with, so you'll hear from them soon. They were anxious to come. And I'm going to have Mary Krinke explain more of the detail of this so that she can answer your question a little more directly. So.
Thank you. And welcome to the committee, Ms. Krinke. Sorry I didn't go to asking for additional testifiers. So welcome to the committee. Thank you. Madam Chair, and for the record, my name is Mary Krinke, and I'm with the Minnesota Hospital Association. I think I just would like to take a minute to provide just a quick minute of background. I think it might be helpful to put it in a little bit more context of where this came from. You know, very rarely in Washington these days do they pass bipartisan legislation with both support from the Republicans and the Democrats. And in 2014, they passed the Excellence in Mental Health Act, where they really wanted to be able to get some stable funding into community mental health centers. There's a recognition all across the country that we really are in a crisis situation with our mental health services. So Congress enacted what's called the Excellence in Mental Health Act, and they gave 24 states the ability, this first round of this demonstration project. Now the hard part for us here is now we are competing against 23 other states, and only 8 states are going to be selected to be part of the demonstration project. So that is why there is this push to get this legislation through this year so that we can qualify to be one of the 8 states. With that, the federal government is going to put in about a 90% federal match to the Medicaid dollars that are put up here by the state. So this really is a really unique opportunity to coordinate care across the continuum for both mental health as well as chemical dependency and chemical treatment. So it is a combination of the two services, mental health and chemical treatment. And we know oftentimes, sadly, those two things do go together. So as part of this, it's a new funding mechanism, a new funding model. There is a requirement that these certified clinics have to work with hospitals, they have to work with other providers, they also have to work with the counties. And I can't answer Representative Loeffler's question entirely, but I do think there's a little provision in the bill that I think she will find some comfort with, if I may. It's on page 3.316. As part of the certification process, the commissioner shall require a letter of support from the CCBHS's host county, confirming that the CCBHS and the counties it serves have an ongoing relationship. So this whole goal of this project is to work with the counties and work with other providers. So I don't think there's going to be alienation or people left out. I also know that Hennepin Health could also potentially qualify as one of these CCBHSs. So there's an opportunity here. I just want to also point out, I know that the Safety Net Coalition, of which Hennepin County is a very large member of the Safety Net Coalition, they are listed in the supporters of this legislation. So I know that may not answer all of your questions, Representative Loeffler, but I do think it's an important piece of it. So with that, I just would like to say that the Hospital Association strongly supports this legislation, as do many other stakeholder groups. And in closing, I really would just like to highlight one article that happened here in Minnesota about a year ago. There was a community mental health clinic up in the Riverwood area that served 5 counties in Minnesota. And when it closed, it left some 3,000 people who had been getting their mental health services at this mental health clinic. And when that mental health clinic closed, guess what happened? Well, a lot of them showed up to area hospital emergency rooms as their point of contact then. So the Hospital Association began realizing that there is this interdependency and connectedness with all of the other mental health providers. We're in this together. So we have made this our priority to help pass this legislation this year. Even though the money doesn't directly come to the hospitals, we just know that we need to have a stable mental health infrastructure at the community level, and that will help all of our residents. So thank you. Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, and I wasn't speaking in any way in opposition. I said it was really a good process. I'm just trying to figure out how all our pieces that we've activated can work together, because after we're done meeting 10 weeks from now and you try and work it, we just don't want to have problems arise that we didn't have a chance to think through. And I just didn't see their mention here, so I just want to make sure it's on the radar screen. The other thing, I think that we did fund a mental health conference that was held this past summer to meet the needs of Somali and other immigrant populations who are coming in, who have a different sort of cultural background and effort, and I didn't see some wording related to that on the DHS requirements, and I thought you might want to think about that before the next stop as well, because it was really eye-opening to me when some of the national experts came in, and even just interpreting questions that we would take as just a normal interaction between a provider, and that it got interpreted differently, and so there's just some differences, and you know, this is still new. We don't have a lot of evidence based for what works best with certain populations yet. Mm-hmm. So just to give a little wiggle room to those who are catering to those cultural specific groups so that they can actually do what's effective. But it sounds like a great idea.
Ms. Krinke.
Madam Chair, I was just going to comment that the federal government, this is truly a demonstration project, and the 8 states that are selected are going to have standard measurements and report back, and it's no guarantee the federal government will continue the program, but they're going to look at the 8 states and they're going to see what worked differently for different populations and what did they learn from the experience. So we just would like to make sure Minnesota is one of those 8 states. So.
Representative Mullery.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And as Representative Loeffler said, especially immigrants, I work quite a bit with immigrants, especially from Southeast Asia, and I was surprised, but there's tremendous mental health issues in the Cambodian community, and they can't get treatment. So I think this needs to have something in it that, because of the, they came from the Pol Pot regime, and that was, many historians think, was more of a slaughter than even Nazi Germany, and so that's an important thing, but I also was concerned about some of the community clinics that actually are best at getting people of color to are trying to do this kind of overall, but their first is regular health, and then they're trying to do the mental health and chem. I'd like to see something that they could qualify here, too, even if it's not mental health that's their number one issue, because they are reaching a part of the population that a lot of the big providers aren't reaching.
Ms. Krinke. Madam Chair, I know this committee has been very supportive of the federally qualified health centers, and I also know that these certified clinics are supposed to have some element of primary care as well. I don't know if that specifically addresses your concerns, Representative Mullery. I will try to figure out what additional outreach there will be to the new immigrant populations. I think that was a very good point. So, Representative Mullery.
Also, for instance, the African American community relates to certain community clinics better than to the big ones.
Representative Keel.
I was trying to read up on it. I know somewhere I saw also that it included the American Indian population, and there was reference to different groups also that needed to be included in this demonstration. So I think, you know, it's really important. And then I would like to, when we're talking about different areas, you know, in rural Minnesota, it's miles and miles for somebody to seek any kind of help. And I'll share with you one small story. I was called by a parent fairly late at night, and they needed help right away. And they said, "What do I do?" And we looked and looked and looked. And my husband was sitting there, and it's 11 o'clock. And he said, "You're not going to find anybody expertise up here at 11 o'clock at night." And I said, "Oh, I think I can." I finally found somebody in Fargo that they could go and get help from, and we got on the phone and we were able to connect them. But and that happened to be a chemical dependency, but mental health has been, it's really hard for people to seek and find help, And it's just heart-wrenching to listen to a parent that's got a 27-year-old that's just struggling and they want to help and can't find help. So I think this is a really awesome way for us to be able to extend that help and get what families need when they're trying to help their loved ones.
Ms. Yang?
Sure. Madam Chair, Representative, I just wanted to point out that on the first page in line 15, 16, and 17, there is wording about having staff who are culturally and linguistically trained to serve the needs of the clinic's population. And what I can also share is that community mental health centers like ours at the Wilder Foundation often are the primary care providers for many of our folks, especially folks from communities of color. The majority of the population that we currently serve are from communities of color, from African American communities, from Southeast Asian communities. In fact, I think I might have the only doctoral level psychology staff psychologist who speaks Khmer and serves the Cambodian community. And so so we understand well the need to really be responsive to the community that we are located in, whether we're in an urban population like where we are or whether we are like many of my colleagues who are in greater Minnesota. I think the intent of this is to really understand and serve the people who utilize your clinic. And for many of our populations, we are finding that we're the primary care provider for those populations, and this will enable us to work much more across systems and to provide a fuller set of care.
Thank you. Okay, members, I'm not seeing any further questions at this time. Representative Keel, any closing remarks?
Just, you know, as you watch this move along, I'm sure there will be, you know, some changes. And as we work through it, I ask you all to be paying attention. I think it's a wonderful opportunity for us to be more efficient in our health care. And certainly as we talk about it in many areas, mental health is seriously a problem that we need to address along with chemical dependency. And like somebody mentioned, it really goes hand in hand. So hopefully we can help those people to be successful.
Okay, members, I will renew my motion that House File 2609 be re-referred to the Committee on Health and Human Services Finance. All those in favor, say aye.
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 Those opposed, no. The motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Keel. And members, our next meeting will be during our normal committee time on Tuesday, March 15th. With that, the meeting is adjourned.